And good afternoon once again, everyone. Chad Holmes with you. Hour number two of the Chad Holmes Show here on Bull Falls Radio, 98.9 and 1230. Online at bullfallsradio.com. Mobile devices and Alexa by searching WXCX. Well, we are getting a dose of fall, and it almost feels like early winter the last few days. Started on Friday with temperatures that have the lowest high temperature on record here in Wausau, and it's continued even with some snow on the ground as we got things underway this morning. What to expect weather-wise here early in the week? Well, time to talk weather with our weatherology meteorologist, Nick Carlisle. Nick, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
It is a chilly start to the week. Are we going to expect any change here as we get into the early to middle portion of the work week?
We will, actually. It looks like temperatures will be warming up fairly nicely here as we head into the end of the week and especially into the upcoming weekend as well. But until then, it looks like temperatures continuing to stay about 20 degrees below average for this time of the year for at least the next couple of days, with a slight chance of a rain snow mix possible as we head into the afternoon. Otherwise, mostly cloudy skies will continue with high temperatures staying around 36. Winds out of the northwest at around 20 to 30 miles per hour. Tonight, we'll see a slight chance for a few scattered flurries with a low temperature into the upper 20s. Winds staying out of the northwest between 15 and 35 miles per hour. Tuesday, we'll see a good chance of rain mixing with snowfall at times, especially later into the afternoon. High temperatures staying around 39 there for Tuesday, with winds out of the northwest at 15 to 25 miles per hour. Wednesday, we'll see mostly sunny skies. High temperatures staying around 45. Winds out of the northwest between 10 and 15. We'll see mostly sunny skies again on Thursday. High temperatures warming up to around 51. And staying with some sunshine again on Friday with high temperatures near 60 degrees. I'm meteorologist Nick Carlisle.
Tell you, 60 degrees on Friday sounds very, very good. Our body's starting to get used to this cooler weather after, in fact, I think about a week ago we were in the 70s. But boy, I mean, this time of year, it is 20 degrees below normal. That is quite a dip, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very unusual. In fact, our highs for the next couple of days are actually below our average low for this time of the year, which is around 38 degrees at this time. So yeah, it's very impressive to see some very cold weather this time of the year, but at least it looks to be short-lived this time.
Absolutely. Well, Nick, thanks for the information. We'll talk again real soon.
All right, sounds good.
And again, it is a chilly one out there right now in Wausau at our studios on East Wausau Avenue. Temperature stands at 36 degrees. You have 36, but it feels actually colder. It's a bit of a breezy day. Winds out of the south at 19 miles per hour. The wind chill factor is 26. So if you have any outdoor activities lined up, make sure you bundle up this afternoon. Also, the visibility 10 miles, barometric pressure 30.03 inches, and the dew point. I don't know what the dew point is. They don't tell me here. And relative humidity, the dew point is 25. Yep, the dew point is 25. Relative humidity of 63%. That's why I bring in Nick to do the weather. I'm not as smooth doing the weather as Nick is. So thanks to Nick Carlisle and Weatherology for joining us and giving us the scoop on the weather. And again, looking good Friday because I'm looking forward to Friday. Wausau West Warriors start off the playoffs. Yep, on Saturday, the WIAA released their playoff brackets, and Wausau West is a number 4 seed in Division 1. The Warriors will be taking on the Wisconsin Rapids Lincoln Red Raiders, and that's a tough matchup for a first-round game because both teams, they were part of a three-way tie for the conference championship in the Valley Football Association, and not getting much respect from the WIAA computers, but Wausau West, who knocked off Wisconsin Rapids in a tight one, 20-17, back on September 2nd, a game where Rapids led 17-6 at halftime. Well, the Warriors will host the Red Raiders Friday night. I will be at Tom Field for that one, live right here on Bull Falls Radio, 98.9 and 1230, online at bullfallsradio.com, mobile devices and Alexa, starting with the pregame show at 6:40 and the opening kickoff at 7 p.m. Also, the Newman Catholic Cardinals in the 8-player playoffs, a number 1 seed, they will host McDonald Central, Chippewa Falls McDonald, in a first-round matchup played at Merrill High School Friday night. That game can be heard live on our website, bullfallsradio.com, and Sports Stream 2. Again, bullfallsradio.com, Sports Stream 2. Tom Weaver will have the play-by-play with Jeremy Cole, starting with the pregame show at 6:40 and the opening kickoff at 7 p.m. The Newman game against McDonald Central will also be heard on a tape delay basis following our coverage of Wausau West football. So a football twin bill with both the West Warriors and the Newman Cardinals Friday here on Bow Falls Radio WXCO. Also, earlier today in Portage County, a circuit judge rejected a request for a temporary injunction from the Tomorrow River School District and Amherst High School, which would overturn Amherst football forfeits and place the Falcons into the playoffs. Amherst remains out of the WIAA playoffs, and the playoffs will continue as is. At issue was the discovery of the use of an ineligible athlete by Amherst football team, which was reported via an anonymous tip to the WIAA last week. The district investigated further and was determined a student athlete had participated in his fifth year of high school athletics in violation of WIAA rules. As a result, all wins by the Amherst football team prior to October 11th were declared forfeit losses. So and they did defeat Stratford Friday night, but still all those forfeits left them out of the playoffs. Going to take a break, and coming up next, we'll talk to Lance Trollope, the vice president of the Wausau School Board, here on Bow Falls Radio WXCO. With you, Chad Holmes Show here on Bow Falls Radio, 98.9 and 1230, online at bowfallsradio.com, mobile devices, and Alexa by searching WXCO. And we're going to talk some local school board issues in a bit more with our guest, Vice President of the Wausau School Board, Lance Trollope. And Lance, thank you very much for popping on in.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
It helps if I turn on the microphone, you know, that's always a good start. But Vice President, former President of the Board. How long have you been on the school board?
So I'm currently finishing up my 12th year.
Hard to believe, isn't it?
Yeah, it goes fast. I remember when I was the young guy that joined the board.
Oh,
not so much anymore.
You're still the young guy. Before we talk about some issues on the board, I wanted to talk about public service because I think that's such an important aspect of our system, and it's, you know, there's folks that go city council, county board, school board, Madison, Washington. What initially got you interested in being in public service? Not specifically school board, but just wanting to do something outside your work as a lawyer.
Well, I'm from the area. I'm from Wausau, so it's important to me. And I just thought that it would be important to give back to the community in some way, to serve the community in some way. So then it becomes a matter of deciding how, you know, in what way can I serve the community. I grew up in a family that talked about education. My mom was a teacher when I was younger and then an administrator when I was older. So we talked education. And I'm a product of the Wausau School District, came back here after I left for school. And so it just felt like a natural fit that serving on the school board would be the way to go. At that time, I probably didn't think that I'd be here talking to you, saying I'm finishing up my 12th year, but yet here I am.
And the thing about it is it's probably been a long 12 years because it has not been a boring 12 years, has it?
No, it's in some ways it goes by fast, but you're right, it's not boring. There's always something, you know, every year there's something interesting that we're working on.
Something along the same lines of public service is, over the last half decade or so, it's become a rather heated environment. No matter what level you're involved in, whether it's, you know, local government, state government, school boards have had some heat as well. What has changed in terms of the work on the school board in these 12 years? Do you find it more difficult, less difficult? Just generally in terms of maybe what you expected to be involved with when you got on the board and what you've dealt with over these years. Anything surprising along those lines?
I think things changed a bit during the pandemic. You know, that was one of the most challenging times to be on the school board. I should preface it by saying any difficulties or challenges that we as school board members faced during the pandemic were felt 100-fold by the actual employees of the school district. I think of our administration dealing with the pandemic, whether it's the technology department having to create emergency remote learning, or you know, our nursing department, or our pupil services, or think of being a superintendent during the pandemic. Had to be the hardest time to be a superintendent that I can think of. You know, Act 10 comes to mind back in 2010 when we had a big budget cut, but that would pale in comparison to being a superintendent during the pandemic. And then our teaching staff, I mean, it was incredibly difficult for them. It was very stressful for them. It was a lot of extra work for them. There was this misconception, I think, that when we were online doing remote learning, that that was somehow easier for teachers. It was not. It was more work with less reward. You know, I almost cringe to talk about the difficulties as a board member because I know it didn't compare to the difficulties that everybody else faced. But yes, serving on the board during the pandemic was hard. It was hard because, for a lot of reasons, I guess. One reason is it was all brand new. Usually we're making decisions where we have educational experts that are talking to us, giving us advice based on years of experience of having gone through this before, of seeing this new thing implemented in another district, and now we want to try it here. But not with the pandemic response. That was new to everybody. Uh-huh. So everybody was just sort of learning as they go. And it was an issue that really sort of divided the community. And as a board member, you're used to making decisions that some people don't like. That's just part of being a board member. I think along the way you learn that even when you make a decision that most people don't like, or that most people do like, you're going to hear from people that don't like it, because you're just more often going to hear complaints than compliments. That's the way it goes in feedback, basically. Uh-huh. But this was one where it really seemed to be divided kind of evenly. We were hearing it from both sides. And what was interesting about it is that many people on both sides thought that the decision was quite obvious and easy. Of course, they both disagreed with what the right decision was, but they thought it was really obvious and easy to make. So that was certainly a change. That aside, though, taking the pandemic decision-making out, we haven't, at least I haven't personally, felt a great deal of pressure or change serving on the board, you know, over the last 5 or 6 years, other than that one time period of dealing with the pandemic. And thankfully, we're basically beyond that now. We're not beyond COVID, of course. I think it's always going to be with us, but we're not in that situation we were having to deal with COVID initially.
Again, we're talking to Lance Trollope, Wausau School Board Vice President, here on Bow Falls Radio, 98.9 and 1230. What have you found out after the virtual learning and everything else? Does the board look at have the students, are they at the point where you would expect them to be? Was there any loss, I guess, in terms of learning during that time frame? Do you look at stuff like that in terms of making sure that the students are at the point they should be at the point of their educational journey?
Yeah, we learned a few things, a lot of things.
imagine.
We learned as a board, certainly I learned, that there is a difference between the emergency learning that we did remotely in response to the pandemic and virtual learning. So we have a virtual learning offering through the Wausau School District called our WAVE program. And that's a curriculum that is designed to be delivered virtually and is taught by teachers who are trained to deliver it virtually. Mm-hmm. That's different than taking your classroom curriculum that's designed to be taught in classroom by teachers that are trained to do it in classroom and then suddenly trying to teach that remotely with families who at the same time are dealing with what everybody was dealing with because of COVID, right, whether it was business shutdowns or illnesses or what. And so I learned there was a huge difference between remote emergency learning and virtual learning. And one of the things I learned is that it's subpar. Uh-huh. It is not equal to actual virtual learning. There was a short time period where we were fully virtual, a couple months, and then we got back to where we were in person for those who wanted it and virtual for those who wanted it. We did notice some loss, like all districts have. I think that's been reported statewide and nationally, that there certainly was some educational loss during that pandemic. And we've been taking steps to try to make up for that. But frankly, we would be doing that anyway. Whether we had the pandemic or not, we always are trying to improve our learning as much as we can.
When you look at the board itself, you said it was a lot of pressure during that time frame. Now that we've gone through that, and back to quote normal, end quote, as normal as possible. How's the board working? Do you feel like the board is working well together? Do you feel like with the questions that we're going to talk about that are currently involved in front of your board, how's the atmosphere, the collegiality on the board right now?
I think it's quite good. It was a bit odd for us during the pandemic, at least early on, because we were in a strange situation of only having 8 board members. Because we had one board member who had to resign for an illness. And so we were at a 4-4 tie for a lot of votes in response to the pandemic, which sort of magnified the problem that many boards were facing, because we were literally split, because we had a 4-4 tie until we appointed a new board member. I will say, though, that even during that time, people would come up to me and say, they'd talk about, a divided board and how divided you are, but in 9 out of 10 issues, we weren't. But the one big one that everybody was paying attention to, of course, we were. Now we're back to a more normal, so to speak, board makeup of 9 members. So we shouldn't have tie votes. And, I do think that we're working well together. And it doesn't mean we always agree. Right. I don't think we would want a board that always agrees. The point of it is to have discussions and disagreements, and then hopefully compromise and come together on something that we can all support.
You mentioned before about, during some of the discussions during the pandemic, that people would say it's pretty obvious what the right decision is. When I talk to county board members or city council members and people involved that have to make these decisions, they often talk about the amount of information they have to go through. How much information do you have to go through on important issues before the school board? Because obviously everybody as part of the board has other aspects of their life, work and family and everything else. How much research and how much information do you have to go through to make the decisions that are so vital to families here in Wausau?
A lot if you're doing it the right way. So we have a regular board meeting once a month. We have a committee of the whole, which is the whole board, once a month. And then we have various special meetings. And people may see that as, a few hours each evening. But there also is a whole packet of information that we receive ahead of time that we need to study, information that we need to review. And oftentimes, it's discussions carrying over for months. So you're having to go back and refresh your memory. And if you're doing it the right way, yeah, it is a lot of time. But it's rewarding as well if you think that you're making a difference, if you think that it's important to serve in a public service role, and if you care about public education like I do, it's rewarding.
Is it hard to balance because you do have a job you have to work on? And how difficult is the balance for anybody that would be interested in becoming a school board member?
That's a consideration for sure. You often will see people who are retired gravitate towards running for that position. People who have some flexibility with their work hours, I think, helps as well. But almost all of our meetings are in the evening, though. So still, most fully employed people can still do it because our meetings are typically at 5 o'clock or later. The information that we have to study for the meeting to get prepared for it, you can do on your own time. And so it's an exciting weekend before a board meeting, but yeah, you can get through it.
Real quickly, before we have to take a break, you mentioned the fact that sometimes you can have it skew a little bit older. How important is it to have viewpoints from different age groups and maybe just different groups within a community? Because it could probably be a little too easy to have a lot of groupthink if it's all based on the same kind of people on the board.
Yeah, I think it's, I don't know if I would specify any one thing like age or anything else, but it certainly is helpful to have various viewpoints on the board so that we can have a discussion and come to a compromise, come to an agreement that didn't just start with one point of view. Mm-hmm. The one thing I think that's important to have everybody care about, though, is to have a board full of people that care about public education. That's the most important thing. And if you have that, you're headed the right direction.
going to be talking about that, public education, because it's obviously a very big topic when you look at some polls that are being put out about some of the issues out there in the state of Wisconsin. So we're going to talk a little bit about that after we take a quick break. More with Lance Trollope, the vice president of the Wausau School Board, as we continue here on Bow Falls Radio, 98.9 and 1230. Welcome back. Chat Home Show here on Bow Falls Radio, 98.9 and 1230. BowFallsRadio.com, mobile devices, and Alexa. Again, we are talking to the vice president of the Wausau School Board, Lance Trollope. Let's talk about a few of the issues out there. And I'm going to start off with one because I hear about it because it's part of my work. I've been doing Wausau West High School sports for about two decades now. So one of the issues is in athletics, because Wausau East right now does not have a varsity football team. There's been a lot of talk about some differences between West and East athletically. And I know that there's other issues. Maybe there's some issues beyond the athletics. There's been rumbles for a while about perhaps going back to a one high school setup in the city of Wausau. Is that something that's being discussed right now within the board or within committees of the school board? Where do we stand in terms of that? Because I know there's been some issues there for a few years now.
Yeah, it's being discussed. I apologize. I give you a long answer. I think we have, because I got to back it up.
So, you got plenty of time.
Okay, so last year we passed a successful referendum. And in developing that referendum, we identified needs at all of our district buildings, and we have a lot. We've got 13 elementary schools. We've got four secondary schools. We've got a school forest. We've got an administrative building. We've got a maintenance building. We got a lot of buildings. And when we first started that process, I don't remember the numbers exactly off the top of my head now. I lived them for a while, but now I'm not now. But right. We were in the $180, $190 million range. And by the time we got to the end of what we actually put forward to the voters, we were at around $120 million. And one of the main reasons for that change, or the reason for that change, is we took about $60 million of elementary spending out of the plan. And we explained in our meetings that the reason we did that is because we were still in the process of analyzing whether or not we would undergo any district restructuring. Mm-hmm. We talked about it a little bit leading up to the creation of the referendum plan, but decided that that referendum was not the right time for it. We didn't have enough time to address all of the concerns of the community. We didn't have enough time to get feedback. COVID really impacted our ability to get feedback from the community and even staff. And so we thought we better not make any decisions in that regard. And we went forward with the $120 million referendum, which focused primarily on the secondary schools and then some safety and security updates in the elementary schools and a couple additions at some crowded elementary schools. But we also talked about how that restructuring decision and discussion was going to continue. And in the spring, last spring, we formed two subcommittees, one for secondary schools, one for elementary schools. And those committees met over the summer. They were made up of school district employees, parents, community members, school board members. And the elementary committee and the secondary committee discussed possible changes. What would restructuring look like? What are the pros? What are the cons? Because trust me, there's both. Mm-hmm. There's pros and cons to merging. There's pros and cons to staying as we are. What concerns are out there? And so that was the process over the summer. And now, since the start of school year, administration has been reaching out to staff to hear their concerns and hear their thoughts. And that decision-making process is still going forward. So getting back to your question, you asked specifically about a high school. Mm-hmm. Certainly no decision has been made. There has been no decision made as to whether or not we would merge elementary schools or merge high schools or change our high schools in some way. You could have, two campuses and one high school, or one campus and one high school, or leave it the same way it is as it is now. I mean, all of that stuff is being discussed. The extracurricular activities are one of the issues that you mentioned. There are educational disparities between different schools. There are facility disparities among our elementary buildings especially. So all of those things are being discussed at this time. So I'm not surprised that you're hearing about it. That's a good thing. We want the community talking about it. We want feedback about it because that's a discussion that's ongoing.
And I imagine, and we talk about the feedback, I imagine over the years that people learn that you can't make fiat decisions, that you really do have to have a buy-in from the community, whether it is a referendum, whether it's a significant decision that involves whether it's changing borders, changing the way that the high school is set up. It really is a process, isn't it? And that you guys just can't get together and say, hey, well, this is what we think. This is what we're going to do. It takes a lot of time and a lot of communication, I imagine.
It does. When it's a decision that isn't requiring any additional finances, I suppose technically we could do it without community feedback, but that would not be a good idea. That's what we're elected for, mm-hmm. is to represent the community. And then to take that a step farther, when it requires additional finances, like the addition of a building or addition onto a building or something like that, because of the way our budget, your school districts operate at a revenue limit, we can't just go out and borrow money. Some other units of government can just go borrow money. We mm-hmm. can't. We have to go to referendum and get the voters' permission to do that. So certainly any sort of change that requires a referendum, the ultimate decider is the vote. It is the community. So it would be silly not to try to put forward a referendum that we think the community wants. We don't want to go forward with referendums that are going to fail. We're trying to put forward a referendum that the community wants.
And there's been some very close referendums here, haven't there? I mean, it really shows that communication is probably the difference sometimes, whether or not you get something passed or you don't get it passed.
Yeah, that's right. And when we fail in a referendum, we conduct surveys and we find out why. One of the most frustrating things after a failed referendum is when you conduct a survey and you find out that a good chunk of voters voted no because of A or B, and A and B were actually incorrect. And what that tells us is we didn't do a good enough job of informing the community, because they thought A, and it caused them to vote no, but that wasn't correct.
Right.
And that's not their fault. That's our fault. We didn't do a good enough job of getting that information out. And so we learn from things like that, and we adjust, and we go forward again.
Again, we're talking to Lance Trollope, the vice president of the Wausau School Board, here on Full Falls Radio, 98.9 and 1230. Before we went on the air, we were talking, and something you brought up is sometimes there can be a referendum fatigue. And I know you have another referendum coming up. There's been a lot of referendums because schools, as you said, that's the only way that when you have these issues that you need money for, you have to go to the voters and go to referendum. How much do you and the board talk about trying to make sure that something such as referendum fatigue does not happen? Because when you do go to referendum, it's because you really believe, and you have the experts who tell you that this money is needed in order to fix this or fix that. In terms of referendums, what is the process in terms of trying to, you know, deciding when to go to the voters, when maybe to hold off on doing it? Because I imagine that's one of the probably the more difficult things to do, because sometimes you have to wait when you know there's still a problem out there.
Yeah, there are a few things that we try to do to put ourselves in a better position to go to referendum. We usually know when it's coming, when it's going to be needed. We try to structure our debt and our payments and our budget in a way that when we go to referendum, we're basically keeping the mill rate, the tax rate flat, mm-hmm. or going down. We went down despite our most recent referendum. If you look at our, if you watch our really exciting September board meeting where we go through our budget, our financial services director, Bob Tess, is amazing, and he does a great job of explaining it. And you can see that our mill rate has been steadily, slowly decreasing. And so that's one step we can do, is try to time the referendums and structure our debt in a way that you don't get a big, huge spike in the mill rate. That's one thing. Mm-hmm. Another thing is for us to continue to educate the public of why we need to go to referendum, that we operate under a revenue cap, that if we need to go forward to repair roofs or build onto a building, we can't just go and do that on our own. We have to go to referendum to get permission to do that. Mm-hmm. But you're right. We wouldn't want to be going to referendum every single year.
Unfortunately, like you say, because of the caps and because of the funding issues, that sometimes you really don't have a lot of choices in the matters. Can you talk a little bit about what will be next that the voters have to decide on in terms of a referendum?
Well, I mentioned earlier that we pulled about $60 million of elementary work out of the referendum forward in 2022. Mm-hmm. And so that work's still out there. Mm-hmm. And we don't have any immediate plans right now to go forward with the referendum. We don't have anything drawn up because of what you and I spoke about earlier. We're still going through this process of talking about whether there's going to be any district restructuring. But that work is still out there. It still needs to be done. So at some point, that'll have to be addressed. But at this point, it's too early for me to predict when or what.
In terms of general funding, how difficult is the job right now? Is there anything that the state could do differently? And I guess I don't know if I'm should be asking this, but at the same time, what, in your opinion, you've been around this for more than a decade now, what could the state do that would make jobs easier for school boards and still, you know, be fair to taxpayers and everybody else? Are there ideas, because you've been so involved in some of these issues, that maybe that our elected representatives should think about, I guess, when they get back to work?
Yeah, there's a few things the state can and does do. One thing that they can do is they can increase state aid and leave the revenue limit as it is. Mm-hmm. And that has happened recently. People sometimes think that means the school district got more money, but we didn't. Because if the state aid goes up but the revenue limit stays the same, that means we still have the same amount of money to spend. But what it means is local property taxpayers are paying a smaller percentage. That's a good thing. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong. I'm not complaining about that. That's a good thing. But if state aid goes up, the revenue limit doesn't go up, we don't have additional dollars to spend. What the other thing the state can do is they can increase the revenue limit. That certainly makes a difference. Another thing, and this has been a hot topic, at least to, you know, school board nerds like myself recently, and there's been a request from the DPI to increase special education funding. Right now, I believe we're funded at about 28%, and there's a proposal to increase that to 40% and eventually higher than that. My own opinion is it should be funded at 100%. Sometimes when people hear that, they say to me or they ask me, but you guys have to provide those special education services either way, so what's the difference? The difference is if we have, let's say, a student that the services cost $50,000 a year, I'll just make up an example. Mm-hmm. If we're only funded at 30%, 15,000 of it, then the other 35,000, and Mr. Tess will be mad if my math is wrong, but that other chunk of it comes out of the general budget. So that means that in a school district that has a high population of special needs, all of the students are harmed by the fact that the state is only funding it at 28%. Mm-hmm. Whereas a school district that has a low population of students with special needs, they don't have that same harm. And that to me is wrong. That should be something that's funded statewide, evenly, equally, so that all special needs students are getting exactly what they need, and so that all students in the district are not harmed in any way based on the percentage of special needs students they have. So that would be a change that would be very helpful.
We hear a lot about public schools and then private schools and vouchers and money going to public or versus private schools. When you hear this discussion, especially during election time, what do you listen for specifically? As somebody who works on a school board for the public schools, what perks your ears up in terms of what's being discussed right now, and what are you hoping to get out of this discussion? Because it does affect, obviously, what's going to happen in the future.
Yeah, I listen for a few things. I listen to try to discover whether people realize that a part of what we tax as the Wausau School District, what they see on their tax bill, doesn't actually go to the Wausau School District. It goes to private schools. It doesn't say that on your tax bill, but we tax for it, but we don't get it. Mm-hmm. And then I also listen to find out, are the private schools going to be required to do the same things that we're required to do, mm-hmm, as public schools? And sometimes I take a too simplistic view of things, but part of me thinks if the requirements that we have are good, then any school that's getting public dollars should have to do the same requirements. If the requirements that are put upon us aren't very good, then take them away from us too. Mm-hmm. And let's treat all the schools that get public dollars the same. Keep the good requirements, take away the ones that aren't very useful, mm-hmm, and treat them all the same.
Yeah, less than a minute, so it's going to have to be kind of quick. I wanted to ask this in terms of teachers. Do you have enough teachers? I've seen commercials that, you know, some schools are looking for people to work within their schools. What is the teacher situation right now? Is there a shortage, bottom line?
I think there's a shortage nationwide and statewide. We're fortunate. We've got a great teaching staff. We work very hard to try to make it to be a district that is attractive to our teachers and to families. So we're fortunate in our position right now. We've got a great teaching staff, but it's something we're looking forward to the future. You know, we're concerned of what the future looks like because we know this is an issue that's spreading throughout the nation.
Thank you very much. I appreciate, I'm learning myself here, some of these issues. I really appreciate it, and hopefully the folks out there appreciate learning a little bit about what's going on within the Wausau School District as well. So, Lance Traub, thank you for spending a few minutes with us.
Thank you for having me.
Again, Vice President of the Wausau School Board. We'll take a quick break and come right back here on Bow Falls Radio, WX. At home show, Bow Falls Radio 98.9 and 1230, BowFallsRadio.com, mobile devices, and Alexa by searching WXCO. Monday, chilly Monday. It's not the best way to start off the work week, but it's going to warm up for the weekend, which is always a great thing. Yesterday was a rough one for the Green Bay Packers. Another rough football weekend. The Badgers lost in overtime on Saturday to Michigan State. First loss under interim head coach Jim Leonard. And then yesterday, the Packers fell to the New York Jets. The Jets look like they're actually much better this year than they were. Now 4-2. Packers did not play well. But some social media can be really good, can be really fun, can be informative, entertaining, all that stuff. But also, social media becomes way too easy for people to just sit there, type it in, and put out really idiotic takes. And this, it should come from smarter people. Dan Needles, he was a former Wausau sportscaster many years ago. He is now a retired sportscaster. He used to be, as well, in Milwaukee, the sports director of Channel 12 in Milwaukee. And after the game yesterday, he puts out, "This game smells a lot like Wisconsin's embarrassing home loss to Illinois. We know what happened after the game. Not sure Packers will be that rash tomorrow, but something has to change." This is what I responded. I said, quote, "Not sure the Packers will be that rash, question mark. In this social media era, a professional broadcaster seems to indicate doubt that a coach who has won 13, 13, and 13 games won't be fired after a two-game losing streak. Just because you can comment on everything doesn't mean you have to." And I believe that. I mean, it's like Matt LaFleur is in his fourth season as the coach of the Green Bay Packers. He went 13-3, 13-3, 13-4. The best win percentage after 3 years of any coach in NFL history. Yeah, he has not got the Packers as far as the fans wanted, which is to the Super Bowl and winning a Super Bowl. They started this season with a tough loss to Minnesota. They won three games in a row after that. They were 3-1. Now they lost a tight one in London last week to the New York Giants. And then yesterday it was a bad performance. It was not good in the second half. It was not fun. It was not fun for anybody to watch that game. But the idea that a guy who should know better, a professional sports director for a Milwaukee TV station for years, not sure the Packers will be that rash, meaning that the Badgers fired their head coach after that embarrassing loss to Illinois, that the idea that that could have been a possibility today, that was possible that the Green Bay Packers, after losing two games in a row, would fire Matt LaFleur after winning 42 games in just over three seasons. It's mind-boggling. It really is. And that's the thing about social media. Everybody's watching. They get on their phone or on their computer, type it out really fast. First thing in the mind, you put it out there, and
it's there for people to judge, respond, whatever it may be. I don't do that really that much. I do it sometimes. I actually, during the top of the hour news, I came across a couple of tweets. And I put it out there because I thought this is ridiculous. Earlier today, Tom Tiffany, the 7th District Congressman, appeared on Steve Bannon's program. Steve Bannon. And Tom Tiffany put on a link to something he was talking about. Tom Tiffany tweeted out 5 hours ago, "The American people deserve hearings now," all capital letters, "on whether or not the Biden administration attempted to collude with a foreign government to influence the U.S. election." What kind of... "If Speaker Pelosi refuses to act, Republicans must add this to the stack of much-needed oversight come January." Tiffany, I mean, they're gaslighting everybody. They're gaslighting us. But he goes on the Steve Bannon show. Steve Bannon is a criminal. Steve Bannon is a fascist who wants a dictatorship. He is a racist. This is the media source that Tom Tiffany uses to speak to voters. Disgraceful. And then right after that, I saw a tweet from today. Justin, DOJ recommends a 6-month jail sentence and $200,000 fine for Steve Bannon for defying a January 6th Select Committee subpoena. And I put out, the guy, our congressman, Tom Tiffany, uses to spread his message. Disgraceful. Sometimes I don't know what to say. I mean, Tom Tiffany goes on Steve Bannon's show. Steve Bannon is... The conservatives are now where David Duke was 25 years ago. And I'm not kidding. Daily Show put out a brilliant piece of video where David Duke uses the same words and other KKK members use the same words in terms of policy discussions that conservatives and conservative talk show hosts use today. It's scary. It really is. It's some scary stuff out there. Tomorrow, we got ourselves a terrific show. At 2:15, I'll be joined by Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes to talk about the Senate campaign he is waging right now against Senator Ron Johnson. And at 3:15, Jesse Apoyan. She is the Capitol Bureau Chief for the Capital Times newspaper in Madison. She had a very interesting piece put out recently about Ron Johnson. Last week, in fact, a very long piece about Ron Johnson and also the U.S. Senate race. So we're going to talk about that, talk about what she found out, because she, you know, followed Ron Johnson, talked to people Ron Johnson talked to. Interesting stuff. I have some points to make with Jesse, I think, about it, but very interesting, worth a read if you want to, you know, check it out before we talk to Jesse Apoyan tomorrow. So again, Mandela Barnes at 2:15, Jesse Apoyan coming up at 3:15 tomorrow here on the Chad Holmes Show on Bow Falls Radio 98.9 and 1230. Thanks again to our guest today, Lance Trollope, the Wausau School Board Vice President, for joining us. And again, coming up on Friday, we'll have the Wausau School Board President, Jim Boucher, joining us as well. So look forward to that. Good week on tap here on the Chad Holmes Show on Bow Falls Radio 98.9. Well, stick around. Coming up at 4 o'clock, we have CBS News at the top of the hour. And then after that, it will be the Devil's Advocates coming up from 4 till 6. Have yourselves a great rest of your afternoon and keep it right here on Bow Falls Radio 98.9 and 1230.
Said the fight to make ends meet. Keeps a man up on his feet. Holding down his job. Trying to show he can't be bought.